Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksurum Militam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So how many people here have attended one of my classes before? Okay, there's quite a few, maybe a little less than half. That's okay. In my classes, no matter what the subject is, there's a unifying theme. And therefore, at least in the past few classes, I began with three questions. Does anybody remember what those three questions were? Go ahead.
Have you found what you're looking for?
Okay, so the first question is, and the idea is, if you're able to answer yes to all these questions, then the class is not required for you. Okay, so have you found what you're looking for? Somebody may have said yes in one sense. They may have been searching their whole life and they found their soulmate yesterday. And the second question?
Is it eternal?
Is it eternal? Right? Because even if you find what you're looking for, if it's not eternal, it's going to be filled with duality because you're going to lose it. And therefore, commensurate with the attachment, there's a certain anxiety and suffering. By the way, can you hear me okay in the back? I just want to make sure the... Okay. And the last question is?
Are you able to focus on it?
Are you able to live and focus in it all the time? Because even if you found what you're looking for and it's eternal, if you're not able to concentrate and focus on it all the time, you can't get the benefit. Do we have any three yeses here? Okay. And then, what?
We all stay.
What's that?
We all have to stay.
Okay. There may be someone who's just here observing it in Nirvana. But generally, not. And therefore, that's what these classes are about, whether I'm talking about forgiveness, whether I'm talking about karma, whether I'm talking about environment. From the tradition of Indian philosophy, it's meant for this goal. And without achieving this goal, you can't be happy. If you try to find your happiness in prakriti or matter, then there'll always be suffering because it's temporary. And whatever pleasure you get, they say this too. There's a saying. A pinch of suffering is found is experienced more than a ton of happiness. So as long as you're in a situation that's full of duality, is going to be suffering no matter what material position you get, no matter what. So the Indian philosophy is a very practical philosophy, how to achieve something that's blissful and eternal, and which you can imbibe in all the time. So when I'm talking about forgiveness, I'm going to be talking about it in those terms. I'm going to be talking it in terms of the yoga standpoint, and that's what these classes are about. Now, I have a quote here that connects forgiveness with yoga. And let me just again explain. I do a lot of things with my hands. What yoga means. There are six schools of Indian philosophy. And they're called darshans, to see or to understand. And within those six schools, you'll find every philosophy. Yoga actually deals with psychology, because it deals with how the mind works and how to use the mind and how to control the mind. But basically, it's described, and this is in the Yoga Sutras, that the mind is malleable, very malleable. And according to the actions you do and according to the environment you associate with, which is anything from the people to the food to the time of the day to the place you're staying in, it's in different modes of nature, and it affects the mind and puts it in a particular mode or shape that has a particular utility or lack of utility. So it's described, if the mind is in ignorance, then there's no light, there's no illumination, there's no morality. You can't see things properly. There's inertia, there's depression. If the mind is in passion, there's intense desire, intense activity. There's also intense anxiety. And in fact, if one wants to be a yogi, two things he has to actually control. One is called laya, if you're meditating, which is laziness or sleep. And that's from ignorance. Another thing is vikshepa, it's distraction. So you can never, even if you've got that goal, I want to be a yogi, I want to realize the soul, I want to be eternally happy, you won't be able to focus if you have inertia or if you have distraction, passion or ignorance. So yoga is a psychosomatic process, if you actually understand it. Detail. I'm not going to go into that now. But basically, it's meant to bring the mind to sattva. And if you look at the mind like a mirror, and sometimes it's described like a mirror. If you describe the mind like a mirror, when the mirror is in its original shape and not distorted, you get perfect reflection. The symptom of goodness is illumination. You can see and experience things very, very clearly. You can discriminate things very, very clearly. You're in a very peaceful state of happiness, contentment, detachment. All yoga, that this yoga chitta vritti nirodha, means the mind has the fluctuations of these thoughts born of intense desire and inertia. And they're distorting. They're distorting the mind and therefore distorting your perception and your level of contentment. Psychology, philosophy, any school of religious thought, theistic thought, the idea is that if you have a higher level of perception, if you can see what's there more clearly, you'll be more content and peaceful and happy. Just think of even going to a psychologist, trying to get you straightened out, trying to get you to see things in the proper way. So the whole yogic process is by focusing on one thing. Just focus on one thing. The other vrittis will gradually, gradually be controlled, and the mind will move to the state of goodness, and you'll have perception and illumination and ultimately be able to understand that the soul, the Atma, the Purusha, who you are, is different from the body and the mind, which is always changing. And one of the changes that the body and mind goes through is dissolution, which is called death, which is actually an illusion. Death is the illusion of non-existence, and we're suffering from it. But what are we suffering from? Hey, Jane. So wonderful in New York. You see dear old friends, they just come in the door. It's just wonderful to see you. Thank you. So, so the soul, when it identifies, when it doesn't see clearly, when it can't see itself, then the soul identifies with the body and mind which has vikara, which has transformation. And therefore you suffer these things which are not actually happening to yourself. And therefore you suffer. Well, Bhagavad Gita says that someone who's in real knowledge, how does he analyze the problems of life? What are the real problems of life? He says, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, darshanam. That the one who actually sees, he sees what is the real dukkha, the real suffering, birth, death, disease, and old age. This is the real problems. I was living in India when India was a poor country. Now America is a poor country and India is a rich country. You know, things change. But it was so poor and people would want to come here and I would tell them, what you think you'll solve your problems in America? Do people not die here? Do people not get old? Do they not suffer disease? So Indian thought, Indian philosophy, if you get clear perception, you'll be able to see and live in the soul and not suffer the illusion of disease, the illusion of old age, the illusion of death. So this is Indian basic philosophy of yoga. And then there's different yogas. Yoga actually, one meaning of yoga is means. It's a means of liberation. There's actually the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita is called Vishad Yoga, the yoga of dejection. How suffering in the world can actually be a means to have you realize the soul. But that's a whole other class. I will give that one time. So now I'm going to give a quote about forgiveness that's connected to yoga. The shadows of resentment keep our spiritual light from shining through, never allowing us to fully experience who we are. You see, so why is that? This is such a problem. Resentment, hate, enmity is such a problem for yoga. And why is it such a problem for yoga? Because it's an action in ignorance. And it'll move the mind, distort the mind, so that you will not have clear perception. Just like a mirror, right? Let's say that you're really working hard on being a model. And you got the right diet, you got the right exercise, and then you go in the mirror. But someone distorted the mirror, but you don't know. And you go, ah! Right? Well, I don't know which way makes you heavy, concave or conflex, but maybe there it is. Yeah. Ah! But what is your problem? Your problem is ignorance. Your problem is you're not seeing. You don't have a proper reflection. You see, so one of the things that most distorts the mind is hate. It brings it to ignorance and you won't be able to see clearly. Think in the world now of the perception of people and groups of people that carry heavy resentment. Don't they generally make just such, don't they have a foolish perception of things? Don't they act in a way that's not in their interest and individually? And the reason why I want to talk about forgiveness in relationship to yoga, because resentment is the hardest type of enmity to give up, because there seems to be a real apparent cause. And therefore it's very, very difficult to give up. So I want to discuss this. I'm going to say one thing also. I may put another website on. I mean, this is 2 hours. It's basically a philosophical explanation, and it may carry you far if someone really has deep, deep issues and things like that. I think I can help you, but I'm going to give you another website of a friend of mine who holds seminars for 2 days where it deals a little bit more with the psychological. Although I do feel that this will substantially give people a perspective. So this resentment, which apparently has a cause, and it has an effect of distorting the mind. You can't do yoga. Because what's the first in yoga? There's 8 limbs. The first is yama. Yama means controlling the mind. It's progressive. Yama means controlling the mind in relationship to others. If you can't control the mind in relationship to others, you can't control the mind in relationship to yourself. And the first yama, which Patanjali, and by the way, it's not an advertise. Well, how do you call it what you want, but a very good friend of mine is going to be giving a seminar, but that's for the teacher training,
yeah.
Professor Bryant, and he has a wonderful, which I've studied before it was published. He gave me the manuscript, so I used to study it. And when they talk about ahimsa, they describe it's like an elephant's footprint. It includes everything. If you're not nonviolent, right, then everything is ruined. So it includes everything. It's the first, and it's progressive. So it's actually part of yoga. So if you carry deep resentments, you're going to be working against yoga, which is to bring the mind to this position of goodness where it's reflected. It's also considered like a mirror. Sometimes it's described when the mirror is dirty, you can't see yourself. So you won't be able to see yourself and you won't be able to see others. You won't be able to have pure perception. And therefore you'll suffer all these type of fears which are not based in reality. Like death. I was at the bedside of my teacher who was self-realized. He understood the self. And I was at his bedside when he left the world, and I saw completely undisturbed. Even I saw when he came to Vrindavan, I came into his room. And he called us in and he said, I'm coming here to die. There was no disturbance. And I think he said, what is death but a change of body? You realize this. And he said, it's a change of body. And then he quoted a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Dehaino smin yata dehe komaran yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dirasa. As the self-realized soul passes from boyhood to childhood to youth to old age, similarly at the time of death, they accept another body. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. So, so this is the to get that clear perception. Ahimsa is at the root. And now we're going to talk about forgiveness when there's harm done. Right? And you have to forgive. I'm going to discuss this because there's a debate about it. And I'm also going to present the debate. There's a famous thing with the Amish that their children were slaughtered. And immediately, unilaterally bestowed at the earliest moment. I'm going to present, I don't know if I'll resolve it, But I'm going to present it. But I would say, at least in my tradition and in my own life, when I talk about forgiveness, it's more important for me to get it than give it. Honestly. And it's true, and that's my tradition also. It's very, very how do you say it? When you're trying to get forgiveness, you're very, very. It's very, very demanding. You're very, very demanding. You're very, very sensitive to the fact that you've offended others. And in terms of giving forgiveness, it's very easy. I can think of two stories, but we're going to talk about more, and I think it's most people want to talk more about giving forgiveness themselves. But there's one famous story of this saint. His name is Srila Rupa Goswami. And he was in a deep meditation. And this is a kind of bhakti samadhi, a devotional samadhi. And he's meditating on all these pastimes of Krishna. And one is very humorous. And he laughs. And while he's laughing, a person with a limp comes by and thinks he's laughing at him. And he doesn't know it, but it's described his meditation broke. But he doesn't know who he's offended. And he's so sensitive. In Sanskrit, the word for offense is called aparad. Aparad means radha. Radha means to worship, and upa means to distance yourself from worship, distance yourself from meditation. When you offend others. So in our tradition, that's what really concerned it. And so what happened is he threw a feast. Why did he throw a feast? He invited all the Vaishnavas. He wanted to see who didn't come. And then the other example, in Krishna Bhakti tradition, the Namacharya, the teacher for how to meditate on the mantra, was a Muslim who became named Haridas. And it's a historical thing. He was persecuted. Because, you know, in that time, the Mughals were ruling India. So this Muslim became, and I was speaking to someone before the class who is, of a Catholic faith. And I said, religion is not, I completely agree, religion is not a particular faith. Religion is the nature of the soul to serve God. That's the way a spiritual person looks at it. He sees someone who's godly, who's surrendered to God. Not only someone that has his allegiance but doesn't behave properly. He's better than someone of another allegiance who behaves better. It's the nature of the soul to serve, to love the divine. So, somehow he found in this chanting of name, but because, it was a narrow-minded look, because he changed the form of what he was doing, he was beaten in 24 marketplaces. This is a true story. And he was simply praying for those people. He was simply praying. He was just praying. He saw how much suffering they must be in to be in that much hate and ignorance. Immediately he felt compassion in that, in his heart. So, but either way, if we were hateful in any way and we offended someone, we have to root that out of our heart. We have to apologize to people. Or if someone offended us and the appropriate conditions are there, And this is the debate. Are there no conditions or there are some conditions? But whatever the case is, when it calls for forgiveness and the conditions are certainly right, if you want to mold your mind to a higher level of perception, you have to embrace it. Now, a little bit of a definition about this in the controversy. I found an incredible article in the New York Times on forgiveness by a university scholar from Boston University who wrote some books on it. I'll just say to you, it's called On Forgiveness, and his name is Charles Griswold, Griswald. And he... So I love how he did this, and it resolved a lot of issues that I was thinking about this. He said, if you really want to think about forgiveness, you got to think about what, when, and why. And I'll explain them. First, what? Well, what is it? Okay, he said, minimum condition of forgiveness is the resentment has to be reasonably tempered, and you have to forswear revenge completely. If those minimum conditions are not there, then you haven't come to the point of forgiveness. And your attitude and actions are distorting your mind and your perception. But now when is it appropriate? Now there's different ideas. Is it appropriate if the person never apologizes? Is it appropriate if the person never realizes what he's done wrong? If the person never apologized? If the offender hasn't taken responsibility? Is it just, in other words, forgiveness is there, but when should it be given? Right? And that's the question. And I would put it this way: resentment means it's resentir. It means to again visit. Right? It means to go back and visit. I'm not sure. I really haven't resolved it myself. If in the worst thing that's in our tradition, if something is done to oneself, immediately you can pardon because you just see it as an instrument of your karma. In fact, there's a story about that in the Bhagavatam, the main book about bhakti. And the story is, there was a great king. This is the Mahabharata. His name is Maharaj Prickett. He's the grandson of Arjuna. And he's such a good king that there's no trouble. He's getting bored. There's nothing lacking in his administration. So one day, a low-class man is beating a bull. And he gets excited. And he comes out with his sword. And he sees the low-class man, and he sees the bull, and then he says, "Who has done this?" And the bull would not identify the perpetrator. He wouldn't identify the perpetrator because he understood, we can explain this by the law of karma, what happens to one, one is the ultimate cause. And then there are different agents. God, through others, gives us our karma. So he wouldn't identify it. And then Marge Prickett, when he saw it, he said, "Oh, you must be Dharma. You must be Dharma," because Dharma always sees the divine will. So there is a sense, the issue I had, and I've debated with these people, it doesn't happen to you, but someone that you love is mistreated. You see, then there's is there a psychological condition of your love that requires some moral outrage for some period of time. But at a particular time, it becomes morbid when you go back. At a particular time, it's certainly going to become morbid. On the cross, you know, and you're still thinking about person that, you know. So, the point that I'm actually going to make here in this class is that forgiveness is dharma. And I want to expand the situations in your mind where it's given to the maximum degree. And if the conditions are reasonably met, and the argument of unilateral bestowed at the earliest moment for oneself, there's an argument for that. If it does to some others, I like myself a little moral outrage. it's a product of love. There's a psychological condition that perhaps to forgive immediately will hamper your own feelings of natural affection for the person. But I really, in this class, want to expand the situation in which forgiveness is given to the maximum degree in your capacity. And now the question is why? And this is very important. Why forgive? Now, this person, this philosopher, made a very, very important point. Is it just therapeutic? There's a lot of things you give, you know, you forgive because it's good for you. Or if you have this resentment, you have this revenge, and then someone gives you a pill and you get amnesia, and then you forget about it, have you achieved forgiveness? So the point that I really like that this person made, and I want to transmit it or transfer it into the yoga type philosophy, is it's a moral responsibility. It's the right thing to do. Now, I'm going to also explain, I have to explain the concept of dharma now. And to make sense of this. And it's kind of what dharma is, but I thought about it in a particular way. Dharma means duty, what you should be doing. So at any moment, aren't you faced with so many unique circumstances, and how do you respond? And hopefully you don't want to respond impulsively. You want to respond. You want to respond in the appropriate way. And it's interesting, what is our duty? Our duty really ultimately depends on who we are. My teacher was once asked, what's the difference between a human being and an animal? And then he said, the human being can ask the question, why I am suffering? That is so interesting. What does it mean? Because why I am suffering, you have to ask the next question, you have to go back. What did I do wrong? Because suffering is an incongruence. It's a lack of harmony between what you are and what you're doing. And the symptom is pain. Pain is just telling you you're in the wrong place. It's not a bad thing. It's telling you you're in the wrong place and you're going to suffer if you don't get out of that place. Just like you get a toothache. So it's pain, but it's telling you there's something wrong. Now, if there's no pain, it doesn't mean that you won't suffer. You'll suffer worse. Because you won't take care of it and it'll get deeper. So what happens is, why I am suffering, what did I do wrong? Then what should I be doing? And then it ultimately comes to, who am I? Because what you should be doing is based on what you are. So ultimately, dharma means our spiritual or eternal nature and the actions that will bring us towards that. So in Indian philosophy, it's very, very comprehensive. In any situation you find yourself in, if you have the proper guide who knows the resources of knowledge, they can advise you what is appropriate in this situation. And what it, and what's appropriate means what's appropriate for you in this situation. Because different people have different duties and responsibilities according to what they are. So when I say, why forgive? Because forgiveness is dharma. In the proper circumstances, the proper condition, it is what you should do to bring you closer to the soul. If you're a progressive human being on this path of self-realization. I wrote down something here that I find it. I said spiritual. It says about forgiveness. It's not just a therapeutic matter, and this was just about you. Rather, when the requisite conditions are met, it is what a good person would seek because it expresses their ideals. This includes spiritual growth and renewal, truth, mutual respectfulness, reconciliation and peace. It is a moral quality. It will help you. Okay, so this is the introduction. Now I hope we'll have some fun. Okay, that was the philosophical. I'm going to ask you, do you agree with these following statements? Okay, in relationship to forgiveness. Okay, you ready? First is a story. It's a true story. There's a young black girl. She's just 6 years old, and she's chosen to integrate a school in the South. And her parents are civil rights type workers, and they're sacrificing their child. All the people in the South there of that place didn't want the school segregated. They pulled their children out. And they were on the side picketing. The girl is walked in by federal marshals. And she's called all the worst things in the world, the most hateful things in the world. And the federal marshal is walking her in. This is a true story. And then the girl says, She's mumbling to herself. And then the marshal says, well, what are you praying? What are you saying? What are you doing? She said, I'm praying for them that they get God's mercy. The federal marshal is amazed and says, why are you doing that? And she says, well, don't you think they need God's mercy? Was she noble? Was it the proper conditions? How much she was abused? And she had that mood. You think of a saintly person. Okay, how's this one? Forgiveness means to give up all hope for a better past. Okay. Now here's one. I write, so I do read good writing. So every year I get the best essays of the year by Robert Atwang. I get that book. So I have a collection of them. So I was reading one, and it's a very interesting one by a man named John Sack, who went to a Holocaust denier conference. And what were his experiences there? So do you agree with this statement? And this is not by a Holocaust denier. It's by a Nobel Peace Prize winner. You ready? And I'm Jewish by family, so I can say this. It says, every Jew, somewhere in his being, should set aside a zone of hate. Healthy, virile hate for what persists in the Germans. Do you agree with that? For some people, it's pretty tough. Should I read it again? You know who said this, according to what this person quoted? Eli Wiesel? What?
Elie Wiesel.
It's hard. Look what happened. Okay, but he said every Jew, somewhere in his being, should set aside a zone of hate, healthy, virile hate, for what persists in the German. So, see? Anyway, what that person's, you know, what his experience was is that the response to hate sometimes is as bad as it just develops hate in response. And you feel you need to get that hate out to relieve yourself, but actually only increases it. This is one I just read recently when Nelson Mandela was coming out of jail. Bill Clinton was walking with him, and he says, don't you feel resentment against what they did to you? He said, no. Bill Clinton says, why? He said, I want to be free. You agree with that? Interesting, isn't it? Booker T. Washington, I shall not allow any man to belittle my soul by making me hate him. Now, are you belittling your soul? Do you have a little hate, some zone there, virile, healthy hate for that person who has done something to you? I'm thinking, I mean, you know, I beg forgiveness for many, many people, and I've also been mistreated in my life. I again, you know, when I think of crazy things that people did, you know, I really try not to let it belittle my soul. Here's a little meditation for you, if you have that resentment. Is your future better without it? Anger makes you smaller, while forgiveness forces you to grow beyond what you were. The stupid, neither... Now, I'm not making any... It's for you to make your value judgments, whether you agree or not. The stupid neither forgive nor forget. The naive forgive and forget. The wise forgive, but do not forget. And I will leave time for questions. Okay, now I'm on to my next section. And you'll understand in the way I give classes, I'm punctual, I'm on time, and I end on time. I don't go off into my personal intellectual ecstasies, you know, into the night while people are looking at their watch, they're hungry, they're children, they have to, you know, go to work the next day, and, you know. So you'll understand, if you come to my classes, you'll be within a reasonable period of time. You can make schedules based on that. Now, again, conditions to forgive, right? Now, here's one condition. Here's the criteria for the perpetrator. First, you have to see, did they really commit an offense? And then you have to see if it's pardonable. Was the person ignorant? Were they youthful? You know, this is something really, really to consider sometimes. I sometimes skip... Here. This is a statement. You can meditate on this. I know that if I make a mistake, offend someone or hurt someone, I certainly want to be forgiven. I want others to know that I sometimes make mistakes due to my conditioning. But my intention is not to do wrong. I want others to know I try my best even though I am not perfect. I wouldn't object if those who I offended pray for my well-being. Therefore, certainly I should grant that same consideration and mercy to others. You see, there's one thing I wrote down is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. If you were... this is a meditation for you right now, okay? So really think about it. Because you know, everyone here is carrying, usually. In all my times and all my lectures, sometimes there's one or two people that, no one's ever offended me. I've had that experience. And I saw the person's face, and I later got to know the person, and I knew it was actually true. They were just so saintly. If you were forgiven today by God, Guru, and others, only to the degree that you have forgiven others, how would your life be right now? You understand? If how would your life be if you were forgiven only to the degree that you forgive others? How would your life be? So again, the first thing is you have to do is, it's interpersonal forgiveness, the criteria for the perpetrator. What are the circumstances? Sometimes you have to think, what would you have been like if you had that circumstance that they were in? How would have you responded? Etc. So that's a very important criteria. Yoga, I'm giving the different reasons I listen. Yoga, I already had that quote about the effect on the mind, resentment has. Now, karma. And I've discussed that. I don't know if I want to discuss it in detail. I gave a full seminar here on what is karma. And if you actually understand the law of karma, I'll just briefly explain it with the hands, okay? This is how it works, karma. This hand represents the perpetrator. And this is the victim. Right? Now, according to the Indian or tradition of philosophy, at least Vedanta, that the nature of the soul is service and devotion. The soul is a part of something greater, and the part is meant to serve the whole. Just like my hand, the function of the hand being part of the body is to serve. When the hand serves the body, then the body is replenished in the hand. So the hand, its dharma, its duty, is to serve. We're part of something greater, and we're meant to serve. So when you exploit, see, in this ahimsa, this nonviolence, if I studied these commentaries by the grace of Professor Bryant, is if as long as you have selfish desire, whatever it is, to a certain extent, you're not going to be able to be nonviolent. There's going to be exploitation of others, violence in terms of words, in terms of like fighting for your space. I had such a beautiful New York selfless moment today. You know, when I come here, I drive a car myself. And I'm looking for a parking spot. And this is where I was staying. And somehow there was no parking spot. But there was one parking spot exactly the size of my car. So I try to get in. I've been in India for 6 months, so I'm a little rusty here. I'm trying to use all the philosophical and spiritual training not to be affected by the modes that are here. You know, I'm really like trying to remain transcendental, you know, not fruitive, you know, just like, so I'm trying to get in, And it's just so close. You know how it is when you just get by the other car and you touch the bumper? You know, you wished, by God's grace, it just went back a little further. And this well-dressed lady, just, you know, nice skirt and high, like little high heels. She starts going, turn this way. She spent 20 minutes with me. You got to turn this way and just get parallel now in the trunk. And she's going this way and that way. And Lenola Stone, her name was. I give me your email. I just have to thank you. Just to meet someone who's just so altruistic, a good Samaritan. But when you are exploitive and you're going against the soul, even though you think you have advantage, you're actually harming yourself. As Socrates said in the Apology, one of my favorite scenes, when they're cursing him to death, the Senate, just for political reasons. And he said, I just want to say a few words to the Senate. And he looks at him, he says, If you think you can harm me, you won't harm me. You'll only harm yourself. Because what harms the soul is a lack of dharma, a lack of action according to the nature of the soul, which is to be selfless. That's what harms the soul. So this is the law of karma. When you're doing this, you're harming yourself. You're exploiting others. You're harming others, oppressing, exploiting, whatever little degree. So there's a concept of Vishnu. It's a name for God. It means everywhere. So Vishnu sees that this is against the nature of your soul. And out of compassion, Vishnu also manifests as time. And in the future, understanding what you did, then the perpetrator becomes the victim. The perpetrator becomes the victim. And therefore, what is coming to the perpetrator was in the perpetrator in the past and is still lingering in his heart, but now he's the victim. And what does the victim now say? I don't like this. But what is he not liking? He's not liking what's in oneself. So that's basically karma, how one can forgive in one sense. This is my philosophy, this is my realization, this is my life. So when something happens to me, I don't see the person, I see myself, actually speaking. And I know there's something in me that's in the person. Otherwise, it wouldn't come to me. It's very complex in that way. And there's many, many examples. I'm not sure that I'll have time for all the examples. I'll just tell one more. Great story. In the Mahabharata, there was this Vidura. And he was the uncle of this Duryodhana, who was very, very evil. And he always tried to give him good advice. But one day, this Duryodhana said to Vidura, his uncle, who was so saintly, he accused him of something, and his uncle was actually born of a maidservant. And so he just cursed him and kicked him out of the kingdom. Get out, you know, you're nothing like a dog. You know, insulted him in such a way. And Vidura was so saintly, When he saw Duryodhana, what did he look at? He didn't become resentful. He didn't become resentful. He thought, he saw the internal and the external. He saw the external was this person's hate. But he saw the internal is that God, the divine, was arranging it. Not only for his purification, but sometimes to have him grow, have him move. And he went on pilgrimage. He saw it was time to get out. So he saw some purpose in it. So that's karma. Then we did that meditation. If you are forgiven, only the extent you have forgiven others. Okay, now I think we should deal with this. Resentful is also so harmful for you. The conditions are right, and it's practically all the conditions. I just thought of one, you know, a little moral outrage. Someone's done something terrible to someone you love. It's an expression of your love. So it'll take you, it only becomes morbid resentment to feel again after perhaps an appropriate time, maybe not initially. But there's one experiment that a teacher did because the kids in the class were just... One reason I never want to take birth again is I don't want to have to go to public school in New York City. Or junior high school, or high school. I don't want to have to enter into the competition for sense grad and all those things that happen. I don't want to do it. I want to realize the soul and stop the samsara. I don't want to go through this again. It's just for sure. But scientific studies show that it's harmful in every way. And in school. I was talking about school. And there was one teacher, so she wanted to figure out how to prevent them from all this kind of petty hate. So she said, look, anybody you hate in the class, I'm going to give you a potato, and you put their name on it. Right? So they kept the bag of potatoes, right? And she wouldn't let them give up the potatoes. So after a week, the potatoes were rotting. So they wanted to give it up. And she wanted to teach them the lesson that this is what your hate and resentfulness is. It's something that stinks. It's in your heart. And then after the Mahabharata, this story, and this king, he lost 100 sons in the war. And the same Vidura, the same saintly person, wanted to explain to him about resentment. He said, resentment is like you want to get someone back. And to do so, you want to throw a hot iron rod on them, and you pick it up in your hand. Right? So it's harmful to yourself. And it costs you. Forgiveness is an act of the imagination. It dares you to imagine a better future. One that is based on the blessed possibility that your hurt will not be the final word in the matter. Psychological effect. I think people have to really see, what is it about you that makes you unforgiving? Sometimes I give meditations, meditate on a person that you admire. You know, and inevitably, it's someone who has compassion, it's kindness. So you have to think, what is about us that makes us unforgiving? Right? Is it just the other person who's so bad? Or is there actually something in our hearts? We want mercy for ourselves. One great saintly teacher said, this is the greatest hypocrisy. We're always begging God for mercy. We always want something beyond what we deserve. I didn't work for it, but, you know, shower me with billions of dollars. Come on. You know? But, in other words, mercy is undeserved kindness. But we don't want to give undeserved kindness. We don't want to be merciful. the greater the thing you have to forgive, the greater it will make it, the more merciful it make you, the more compassionate. So it's also a test of our own spiritual qualities. Okay. I'm going to do... Yeah, I'm right on time. That's pretty good. We're going to do some exercises to kind of... Yeah, these kind of exercises. It's interesting. Okay. Okay, think about, you know, there's always at least one person that really has done something. You just can't, and there's no reason for it. So visualize what your resentment feels like. And draw a picture. Meditate on the resentment and try to draw a picture. These are some of the things that people have said in the past. I am in labor, but I won't let the baby out. I am in prison and the doors are open, but I won't leave. I feel like a boxer is punching himself. I'm in a poison pond and the poison is self-generated. In your mind, make up an image of what you're... Meditate on your resentment that you're feeling now. We all have for some persons somewhere. Meditate on it now. Give an image to it. Draw a picture in your mind. Can look up. Anybody want to share their image? Yes, Robin?
Sort of see an old-fashioned inkwell on a pad of paper and it spilled over.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can dab it and clean up the mess, but the stain is still there. So then the question is, what do you do with that stain? Does it become artwork and you just accept it as part of the paper, or is it something that needs to be thrown away? I don't quite know what to do with the ink stain.
Uh-huh. It's kind of like, you know, even if you clean something, the smell stays. Yeah. Well, my part of the thing is first understanding whether or not you should get rid of it or not. Whether you want to get rid of it, whether it's actually the conditions are such that it's dharma, it's the appropriate thing to do. Have you come to that point?
I don't think I'm going to throw away the pad, but I sort of want to turn the page and maybe not look at it.
Well, I think that's a type of kind of forgiveness in one sense. Tempering the resentment. You're forswearing revenge. Do you want to get the people back?
No, I just don't know if I should put it in a frame and just say, "Well, this is modern art." And put it up there because it's ugly and beautiful and messy and not what I wanted, but maybe it's not so bad. Or just sort of turn the page and try it again. I don't know. That's just the vision I had of the artwork of this
situation. The stain that doesn't come out.
Well, the question is, you know, I guess...
Oh, let's put it this way. Let's say it was your wedding and it was a white dress and then the stain was on the dress before the wedding. Would you want to get it out?
I don't know. If it was such a beautiful dress, and this is just the way the dress is, okay, I'm wearing a stained dress.
Anyway, all I did is I gave the reasons why one should forgive. And what you're just saying is right now is it's so embedded, it's so deep that I can't give it up.
No, I guess I'm not trying to say that. I guess it's just sometimes the ink is out of the bottle, and
it's like
you can't unsee the ink.
Glass is broken, you can't put it together again, that
right.
type of thing.
And the question is, you can forgive that the glass is shattered, or you can forgive that the ink is spilled. But at the end of the day, the ink is spilled, and you sort of.
Okay, but are you resentful, and are you forswearing revenge?
Well, not there's no revenge. There's absolutely
okay.
There's no revenge. In terms of resentful, when I'm at my most forgiving, I sort of just think, wow, they need a few more rounds, a few more go-arounds in this life to get it right.
Yeah.
That's when I'm most forgiving. I'm not quite sure where I am right now in terms of. But that, I guess what I'm really saying, sorry everybody.
No, this is okay.
I guess the issue is really what is forgiveness? Because let me give a basic parallel.
Yeah.
If somebody uses, let's say, a really offensive racial term in a casual conversation with
yeah.
me, and I'm offended, and then they say, oh, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have used that horrible
yeah.
word. I appreciate that they apologize for offending me,
yeah.
but suddenly now I know that's their nature, that this is a word that's part of their casual conversation. So while I can forgive the fact that they offended me by using such a horrible term, they've shown their cards. So what is
got
forgiveness?
Got it. I got
is
it. Okay, here's a story.
Use language like
that? Here's a story to help you, okay? There's two Brahmins, saintly teachers in India, that are going across the river, right? And the scorpion bites one of the people on the hand, right? And then the scorpion, then he takes the scorpion off and he puts it back in the river. And the scorpion jumps again and bites him in the hand. And he takes it off and he puts it back in the river. And he puts it back. And the other person says, why are you doing it? You're so foolish, right? And then the Brahmin said, why are you forgiving him? Why do you keep on forgiving him? And the Brahmin said, well, he's a scorpion. His nature is to bite. I'm a Brahmin. My nature is to forgive. So, it's the quality of the heart of compassion and resentment. And you have to look at the person, too. And maybe it's beyond them changing or whatever it is. But so you're saying is the stain is still there? You're saying the person won't give up their nature. So I'm saying then you don't give up your nature.
So forgiveness is not pretending that it didn't all happen.
No.
It doesn't mean that
there's not punishment. It doesn't. You can punish and also be forgiving. If it's appropriate for, society or for that person, it's an appropriate thing. It doesn't mean those things. It means the yourself and the resentment that is tempered for various reasons. And, you give up that sense. You understand it in all the ways. I'm saying extend yourself. In other words, there's mercy. We want mercy. But for others, we want justice. so it's kind of, there's many reasons to think why we should do it. But I think first we can start at the level for yourself you need to do it. For the platform of yoga you need to do it. It's a moral duty to do it. Right? So, and I'm just saying, if the conditions are there and it's not coming from the heart, then it's not going to help you spiritually.
So the person who uses a slur during a conversation.
What?
So for the person, let's say the parallel would be the person using a slur during a conversation. You acknowledge that person's got some anger
yeah.
and some misguided prejudices. But instead of just saying I'm done, you say I feel really sorry for the person. I forgive them
yeah.
for using a language that's just sad. But you still know that they're biased.
Yeah,
but knowing that
I like that. I like that statement that we made. It said, the stupid neither forgive nor forget, the naive forgive and forget, the wise forgive but do not forget. It doesn't mean you put yourself in harm. It doesn't mean you have to have a relationship with the person. Okay. I'm going to do two more exercises, and we're actually, I brought this because we're going to do a writing exercise and to help you assimilate the knowledge. And are there any other questions? Yes?
In your experience, would you say that forgiving is more an active product of your will or something that just happens to you under a certain condition?
It's because it's the other person who, if anything, has to do something. If you offend someone, you have to realize your offense. You have to, you know, maybe apologize. You may have to make amends. But it's more your inner thing. This is a condition of your heart. This is your feelings. You don't have to. They did something to you. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, actually, I've had experience with people that I, you know, in conditions or something, I may have hurt in ways. And I saw the necessity that they felt to forgive me. I saw the necessity for them, which required that, you know, they speak to me and let me know that they feel that way. I've seen that. You know, and then at the same time, at that time, then people also sometimes realize, you know, the circumstances and things like that. So sometimes it's necessary for ourselves. You know, it's an individual circumstance, but sometimes it's necessary for ourselves to go to the person and express it. Especially if we in ourselves, in response, have hated the person, have done things to the person. You know what I'm saying? Then there's a question that we also may need their forgiveness. Because sometimes our response... That was the quote that I gave. Can you pronounce it again?
Elie Wiesel.
That was the case that person was making at the anti-Holocaust conference, which he actually found out it wasn't... anyway, whatever the case is, he found out that sometimes the reaction, you know, does the same thing in a worse way. And then you become implicated in karma. You know, when I was really upset with some people who mistreated me, and I have one friend, he's a good friend, but he's like a mentor. He's an extremely wise person. And, you know, he just told me, you know, the law of karma, he said, do you want to come back again to get the person back? You'll have to take birth again, you know, to get that person back. You know, do you want to, in a reincarnation, you want to take birth again and get that person back to hold that resentment? You'll have to come, you'll get him back eventually. You have to be born again. And I'm not talking in terms of like any particular faith. I'm talking about reincarnation. Okay, to meditate. Yes, go ahead.
I was just wondering if you could expand a bit on self-forgiveness. Because in her presentation, she said if someone does something, you acknowledge it, you forgive for that, you don't have to have a relationship with that.
Yeah.
If you're not so happy with your own action, you still have to have a
relationship
with
that. You know, in that same article, I don't know if you would hear the whole thing, but this article in the New York Times, that person actually dealt with it. And I wrote down some notes. He said self-forgiveness. He said one, for wrong done to others, for what that wrong has done to you. You know, how you did a wrong to others, okay? Can there be self-forgiveness? Or now, forgiving yourself because... what that thing that you've done, what it's done to yourself, how you, by hurting others, have hurt yourself, and what one has done only to oneself. See, he gave the different question. He says that you have to be a little bit careful with self-forgiveness, that it doesn't morph into forgiving yourself for something you've done that really needs forgiveness from someone else. So it's a very, very fine line, and one has to be very, very careful with that, you know. But there, I'd have to think of it a little bit, you know, but I'm kind of by nature, I'm not like that, so it's, I don't have much realization. I'm kind of like an optimistic person, not crashing myself too much. So I really have to think about that, you know, self-forgiveness, forgiving oneself. I think one should forgive oneself as long as it doesn't abnegate the responsibility one has for one's own actions.
I think a lot of people like have had traumas happen to them.
Yeah.
And then instead of being angry at the person that did the trauma, they somehow take it on themselves as like shame or guilt.
Is that what you're talking about?
Or either way, I think that would be an interesting thing.
Shame or guilt. Well, I mean, that's...
Well, people say, I did this to myself. Or, you know, or it's my fault somehow. Like, And then you're angry at yourself.
I mean, that's just unreasonable. but there is a fact that a lot of times there is something to think about when one puts themselves into relationships that are abusive and there's something about themselves that does it. You understand what I'm saying? There sometimes is some connection between what happens to us and what we do. You know what I'm saying? So in that case, I think there can be, you know, forgiving oneself is usually in relationship to others. I maybe you can pardon yourself. I don't know if you call it forgiveness. Even this person made the comment when Jesus Christ said, you know, forgive them not for what I've done. It says in his saintliness, he was just seeing, he was actually pardoning them. He wasn't even taking offense. He was just seeing them as the perpetrators and absolving them because they not know what they do. They can't control themselves. They're under the mose. You know. Alex?
So I kind of pictured my resentment as like a little kid screaming.
Yeah.
But he's losing his voice.
Yeah.
You know, like he can't stop screaming, but he wants to because he's losing his voice. So then I guess my question would be, when you want to let go of the resentment, you want to let it go, you want to forgive, but you don't know how, or you can't, and for some reason you're still holding on to it even though you want to release it.
Yeah. Well, I just said there's philosophical and there's psychological. You know? I'm trying to give a reasonable explanation for it. And I hope that sets something in action. And hopefully by hearing something like this, people will be inspired, you know, to understand, especially if they're on a spiritual path, especially if it's yoga, and you want to elevate your consciousness. You know what I'm saying? You can't. If you're violent, you can't. Whether, you know, the hate comes to you and then you know, the hate goes back, it's going to distort the consciousness. But like I'm saying, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a friend of mine who holds like 2-day seminars where they actually deal with it more on a psychological platform, if anybody's interested in that. You know, because things are so deep, I should have said at the beginning, I have modest claims for the class. You know what I'm saying? Something so deep, how much I can do in 2 hours. But at least I hope I can inspire people. One, and self-realization is so important. There's nothing more important than self-realization. I had a friend, and they Krishna's have a festival of chariots, and they have a question and answer booth. And there's one of my friends that sits in the question and answer booth. And he's kind of like, the person is like famous for his absolute integrity. He's famous for his sharp mind. So he would stay in the booth for hours and he would say, what's more important than self-realization? And New Yorkers would argue with him. But the fact of the matter is, if you want happiness, if you don't understand the self, you can't line up your activities with the self. In Ayurveda, right, disease is called a crime against nature. Your body requires so much carbohydrates, and that's the law, and you break the law with your 3 gallons of ice cream in the evening. You know, and whatever it is. And the reaction is disease, you're uncomfortable. So it's like that. Unless you understand the self and understand the importance of the self and have some idea of the self and are on a path to get to the self, then you can't be in harmony with the self and you can't be satisfied and happy. So my inspiration for this class is trying to highlight some of the core things that are blocking the light of the soul. And I began with that quote, the shadows of resentment keep our spiritual light from shining through, never allowing us to fully experience who we are. Okay, I didn't get to do all the exercises, but I'm going to do 2 more. One is the law of karma. And again, this friend of mine who's very wise, he knew I kind of had this, I was trying to get over this resentment of these people that treated me so badly. But he understood another thing is, he's very smart, he understood that you can't intellectualize. You also have to use psychology. You can't just negate feelings. So he gave this exercise, so I'll give this exercise to you, and then we're going to end with some writing, and I'll show you how that's done. Okay? Meditate on a person who's mistreated you. Let's not make it like the worst criminal activity. Let's keep it, for this exercise, within reasonable bounds, you know? You know, you were... they politicked against you, you know, yoga politics or you know, something within that realm. Let's not get like the real heavy things. So close your eyes and meditate on that person. Now feel what you feel for them. Okay, now look at that person's face and feel what you feel for them. Now what happens is by the law of karma, I've explained how you're also the cause. Okay, now feel it, right? Now look at that person's face and keep those feelings up. Now replace that person's face and put your own face there. Okay, look up. That helped me. Because all those feelings, they're also directed towards me. Because I know by the law of karma that I was in the same position. So you direct those feelings towards yourself. Now, last question, and then because
I didn't understand. Like, you were in the same position in that specific situation that you were trying to visualize, or
yeah, I was. I had this person that I thought was treating me badly, so my friend told me to meditate on him, and I was going, you know, good, dirty. And then all of a sudden, my friend said, "Now put your face there." And why put my face there? Because I'm ultimately the cause by the law of karma. So I got the emotions out, which are required. It wasn't just an intellectual exercise. But at the same time, I understood. Okay, here's the last exercise, and then, because I'm very good about ending on time. And then I'll just a few I'd like to write my friend's website if anybody wants to go to like it really feels they need it. He has some 2-day seminars. That's okay. I really wanted to focus on the spiritual aspect, and that's what I'm trying to do here at Yoga Maya. In different practical ways in life, add the spiritual aspect. Does anybody need a paper or pen? Because I brought them. Okay, so who needs any pad or pen? And we'll finish in 15 minutes, but this is a really... Okay? Someone like to help with this here? Hand out pen or pads? Okay? We're all hanging in there? Okay, we can all go another 15, 20 minutes. Okay? This will be very, very powerful, I feel. If there's pens here. Your name's Dennis?
Yes.
Yeah, if you could hand out who needs pens. Okay? Okay? Yeah.
Anybody pens?
Okay?
Pens.
Okay.
Pens.
Okay. Are we all set now? It's just one more exercise. I think it'll be really nice. And I'm going to start with a meditation, and then there's going to be free writing. And it's for yourself, so don't worry about it. And what free writing means, once you begin to write, you just don't stop the pen. So even if you don't know what to say, then say, I don't know what to say. But just keep the pen going. So what the exercise will be, we'll just do it in writing. And here's the meditation. And remember, free writing means, we'll do it for 5 minutes, you just keep on writing. The meditation is that you're going to a counselor to get over your resentment. Okay? And the counselor happens to be you. So you begin to write what you would counsel yourself to get over your resentment. Okay? Before we do, we can just do it this way. Before you begin to write, just wait. Just meditate on it for a couple of minutes. Okay? And then I'll tell you to write. Okay? Everyone sit up and meditate. Now start. You come in. You sit down for a counselor to get over your resentment. And the counselor is you. Okay? Now you begin to help yourself get over your resentment. Okay? Begin to meditate and begin to do that. Get yourself over the resentment. You are the counselor. Begin to counsel yourself now. Okay, just look up for a second. Good. Now what you do is do it by writing and just begin to write. We'll do it for 5 minutes. Don't stop your pen. Even if you're giving yourself advice how to give up resentment, you're the counselor. Just don't stop your pen. If you don't know what to say, then say, I don't know what to say. But just keep the pen moving for 5 minutes. look up? We'll just do one more thing, because I think in a class like this, it's important not only to hear the knowledge, but assimilate it yourself. And that means the application of it. And I think you'll... Because if Upanishad says that the way one changes his perception is that he hears philosophical truths, thinks about them, then applies them. And if you apply them enough times, then your vision changes. Just like I may know I'm not the body, but if someone steps on my toe, the charter comes off, my shawl, you know, let's go. You know, so you're not seeing you're not the body. You're not seeing. So the way to do it is, that's why generally people would hear spiritual texts, because you think about it every day and then you apply it and it changes your vision. Because we know things that are true, or we don't know, but even if we know, we don't see them as true. Okay, so we'll do one more thing. Turn to your... underline the point that you think was the strongest that you made. You can underline the point you think is strongest. And then... now, turn to like a neighbor and make sure everybody has groups of two or three. And then just start sharing the points. Just make sure that everybody has somebody to discuss. Just turn with someone and get in groups. And then share and discuss what you talked about. Okay? Okay. Discuss the points.
Hello.
Just I kind of unfortunately keep on time, but I think it's good to assimilate. I like to do this now when I give lectures, especially the free writing. I'm sorry I didn't leave as much time as I wanted. Just Robin, I thought a little bit about your thing about the stain.
What the stain
represents is that you've tempered the resentment. Right, you've tempered the resentment, but something's still there. But you've tempered it, and then, you know, if revenge is not a question. So what it means you're not feeding it. And if you keep in time, then somehow miraculously the stain will start to disappear. Okay, that's the answer to that. I also put my email, if you actually have a question that came up, I don't mind answering questions, because the whole purpose is dialectic is extremely important in teaching. False important teachings are dialectic, because even if someone has some knowledge to share, you have a frame of reference which you have to assimilate it. And sometimes our frame of reference needs to be built up to understand things. So you see in Bhagavad Gita and other teachings, the teacher speaks and then the student responds and the teacher understands. So what are they lacking to actually assimilate what I have? And it goes back and forth. So that's kind of required. So I don't mind answering questions. I also put the website of my friend who has seminars on this, like, you know, really, he had miraculous effect. I've seen it myself in different places. If you feel it's so deep, I'm obviously, hopefully not just by the dress, but I'm in a spiritual community. And even in a spiritual community, I see that one of the anchors is these type of feelings that people have. And when they really want to go ahead in their spiritual life, they have to confront it. And you can leave it. You can leave it. You know, you can try to forget it, or you can confront it. Even the Bhagavad Gita, if you saw it, the whole thing is about Arjuna, the warrior. But what's the real warrior? He confronts the difficulties because he wants to go forward. And that's the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. If you don't confront the difficulties, you don't go to the second chapter where the philosophical knowledge is there. Okay? One other thing is, this is a sheet of anybody. What I'm thinking here in Yoga Maya, I'm giving these general topics, etc., of a philosophical thing. I'm in the school of Bhakti, and I'm going to be doing at Amiya. She comes and she also bakes things here. I'm going to do some. She wants to have some satsang at her home, which will deal with bhakti meditations. Also, there'll be prasad, we call it, food stuffs and sharing, and maybe kirtan and things. But something deep, but in the bhakti tradition. If anybody's interested in going to a satsang at her apartment, I'm not sure when we'll do it, but sometime, maybe a Sunday morning sometime or a Saturday afternoon. You can just put your email here. And then when all the conditions come right, we'll send out an email. Are you interested on this thing? And if anybody likes, so we'll put that here, okay? If anybody would like to sign up. And can we end with 5 minutes of kirtan? Okay? Even though there's no kartals, there's no madanga, but there's mantra. Okay? Okay? And then, Amiya? Isn't that embarrassing? But it's not as embarrassing. Okay. It's Kasuba.
Oh!
Okay. Kasuba?
Maybe you can go with her.
Yeah. Hi, Bo?
It's also the speaker.
Where are you?
I know.
Yeah, come up. We're all still here. Okay. He'd like to come. Amiya has some baked goods. Did Heather make or just?
Yeah.
She did too.
Mm-hmm.
So tell her where it is and we can serve it out.
Oh, they have it all prepared outside.
Okay.
It's all ready.
Okay, so 5 minutes. And we'll do Hare Krishna mantra. Ready? Not even a couple. James, maybe you can clap along. Okay.
Can you play kartal?
Yeah, give it to him.